sights to show you.
Hello, and welcome to the 19th episode of the Sirens of Scream.
19.
The podcast. 19?
That's just so many.
It's a pretty big number.
It took me by surprise there.
Like, am I wrong?
No.
The podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. Tonight, I'm joined by my lovely and entertaining co-hosts, Jackie DeVore and Sierra Houck. Hi, ladies.
Hey. Happy Galentine's Day.
Galentine's. I feel like I should have some kind of cool, spooky name made up for this holiday, but I don't.
We need to come up with, like,
I don't know.
Bloody Valentine. Something better. Something that's not an emo band name.
So I think first we will jump right into our segment called What We're Loving Now and give you some goodies to enjoy, because I don't know what Jackie's got because I don't see her stuff on here. So it's a surprise, but
it's down below.
I have some really interesting stuff that I want to offer today. Actually, let's start. Sierra.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with you because you have a TV show on here and I don't think we've had a TV show for a while.
So the TV show I want to talk about is not super horror, but it's just super good, and I was surprised by it. It's Legion on FX, and there's only one episode out right now, and it's in the X-Men universe, but it super doesn't feel like X-Men or Marvel, which I was really surprised by. And the character is in a mental institution, but he also has powers, so it kind of plays between what's actually happening and what's just in his head, and like what is he controlling, and what is like the actual world going on around him. And especially with, like, I feel like movies with like Split and A Cure for Happiness, is that what it's called, that's coming out soon, like a lot of other horror movies are kind of tackling that whole what is in your head, what is actually happening kind of theme. So seems kind of relevant, but it's just very good and beautiful and thoughtful. All of the production value is really good on it, and all the costumes are really beautiful. So if you haven't watched Legion, like, now is a super good time to start it because there's only one episode. So you,
I keep hearing about this one, so I was really curious to hear your point of view on it.
Yeah, I remember seeing commercials leading up to it, and it looked really like it was something we'd all be into.
It has Audrey Plaza in it, and she's perfect. And it's just really striking, and like the whole art direction of it is surprisingly thoughtful. Watch that. It's on Hulu. Also, listen to Welcome to Deadcast. This is a podcast I wanted to bring up because it's super relevant to our topic tonight. It's two twin brothers who grew up loving the Goosebump books. So now they're rereading them as adults and talking about the book, doing like a synopsis of it, and then talking about the TV show episode that goes along with the book. They love Goosebumps so much. It's so much fun to listen to them talk about it and talk about what they thought of it when they were a kid and what they think of it now as adults, and like how cheesy it is, but still like how fun and spooky it is. So that's a super fun podcast to listen to.
That's really interesting. A couple of adults taking on Goosebumps, because Goosebumps, I think, is one of those things that is decidedly for children.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly wonder how they would hold up, like, as adults now. Like, how would we feel about reading those now?
I think it's also nice for them because they aren't a super difficult or long read, so they can just read the book in a day.
Yeah.
And it's not a huge commitment. But yeah, it's so funny because you, like, going, returning back to these stories that were so spooky to you when you were a kid, and now they're just so cheesy.
I enjoy the most recent movie that was made with Jack
Black.
I did
too. I liked it.
Yeah. I thought that was really fun.
I think they're doing a new one, or a second one to that one, and they just announced that they're doing a Fear Street movie, too.
Ooh.
Oh.
Which was the, like, other book series that Earl Stein did.
Jackie.
I have two recommendations. One of them is a little bit different. I don't think we've had something quite like this before. There's this thing called a book plate. It used to be a tradition. Yeah, it's very strange. I never heard about this until about a month ago. It used to be a tradition to put these book plates in the front of your books to place a curse on the book thief.
Ooh.
So if somebody stole your book, they would be quote-unquote cursed. So this artist decided to recreate all of these book curses. Well, he didn't recreate the exact same ones. He basically made a line of his own. And they're all really cool. They just came out of Kickstarter, and they look fantastic. His name is Chris Volion. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. But his art style is absolutely beautiful. But you guys will absolutely love this. It's a lot of beautiful line work and stippling, and it all has a wonderful horror theme around it in terms of the actual artwork there. Like, there are ravens and skulls and pretty creepy flowers and vultures and shit. And I backed up this Kickstarter the moment I saw it. It just ended. But there are pre-orders out right now, and they're cheap as hell, and they're so pretty, and they're going in all of my books. I love them.
Yeah, it looks like they're just stickers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is what he's selling? Okay,
cool. I feel like this would be a fun way to, like, re-energize, like, a little friends book club or something.
Yeah.
Just to use them, you know, to send friends cool books that you've kind of earmarked and read.
That's a great idea.
Speaking of book clubs, my book club right now that I do with my friends, we're reading a book called Harrison Squared, and it's very, like, Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
It's a, like, young adult novel about this kid who kind of has, like, psychic powers, and then is also, his mom and his dad are both, like, wrapped up in this weird, like, monsters stealing them kind of cult thing in this weird town, so nice. That's been a good read so far.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So my other recommendation is a movie it's not really quite horror, but it is a dystopian drama. So I'm going to share it anyway, because sometimes the idea of a dystopian setting is really scary. Yeah. It's like really horrific for some people. But this is called Never Let Me Go. I don't know if you guys have seen this before or not. It actually came out like 7 years ago, but it's one of my favorite movies, and I just happened to get the urge to watch it the other day. But this is basically the story of a reality where we're basically growing cloned children as crops for harvesting their organs. Yeah. And
that's awful.
Right. It's set kind of 19th century looking schoolhouse, but it's supposed to be modern day, but it looks very old and very established kind of thing. And the children, I mean, they seem like they're normal and leading normal lives, but there's this question going on the entire time of, do they have souls? Like, how much of humans are they really? And they're being raised with the knowledge of the fact that they are going to be harvested once they reach a certain age. And everybody basically goes through these procedures of donating particular vital organs, like a kidney or a lung or something, until they die.
Weird.
Yeah, so it's a really weird setting.
It seems really weird. Why would they bother to, like, put these kids through school and stuff and, like, give them a normal life? Is it the same thought process of, like, well, if the cows are out in the pasture
exactly,
and they lead a good life, then I feel better than if they are just in a cage?
That's exactly what I was trying to verbalize there.
But
yes,
with children.
This stars Carey Mulligan, who I absolutely am in love with, and Andrew Garfield. And they are really disturbingly good in this. Like, you can really see them in this dystopian setting, and it's a little bit upsetting for this, but if you like stuff that makes you feel things, I'd recommend this highly.
I hate feelings.
Yeah.
And Keira Knightley too.
Yeah, Keira Knightley.
I really don't know what kind of actress she is, but she always fits perfectly into any, like, period piece.
She kind of does.
She's not of this time.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the IMDb for this page, and what I think is really funny is there is no hint at all of, like, the weird macabre background of this story.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, oh, this is a story of some children who are friends and grow up together.
Yeah. They, like I think it was marketed as a coming-of-age story, and it's one of those things, like, even when I was told about it, it was by a friend who has seen it before and gave me no idea as to what it was actually related to, so I had no idea what to expect going in, but it really takes you by surprise how everybody is adjusting to this weird reality.
With all these, like, romantic pictures of them holding hands.
And running down the pier.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom used to make my sister and I take her to various movies that we didn't want to see. We would take turns, like, romantic comedies and stuff that we didn't want to see. And it just looked like the kind of movie that my mom would see and go, oh, that sounds like a nice movie.
Well, so I have this great way that you can trick your mother, Melissa.
Oh.
By showing her this. show her the poster art and be like, Mom, let's watch this. It looks like quite a lovely little romantic comedy here.
Look, how's that girl from Pirates of the Caribbean that you like?
Gonna fuck her up.
I guess I'll start out with my feelings recommendation too, since Jackie took us there.
Took you to the feels.
I'm gonna recommend Monster Calls, which we just saw. I did not read this book. I know it's based on a novel. We have seen the trailer for this before probably two or three films now, and I was not able to get through a single trailer without crying. So I have a really That's complex relationship with this movie. We sat down and I said to Ryan, you know, I really want to see it, but I know that it's going to be torturous. But let's just do it and get it out of the way. I'm just like a sobby mom now. So that sounds so pathetic. So anyway, we watched it and it is a beautiful, beautiful movie. I think because I didn't read the book, I kind of had a general idea from the trailer of what it was about, but it was not what I expected. This movie has Sigourney Weaver, Felicity Jones from Star Wars, Liam Neeson is the voice of the tree monster. It's just really, really beautiful. A Monster Calls is about a boy whose single mother is dying of a terminal illness. And this is not a spoiler. This is what the entire film is based on. And he calls upon a tree monster to help him get through his grief and his anger over what's happening with his mother. It's interesting because I kind of thought, when I saw the trailer, I thought, okay, this tree monster is going to sort of be a tool for him to express his anger. You know, it's this big, giant, scary monster, and like his branches kind of fly out. And when the monster gets worked up, he kind of looks like he's got fire inside of him and he starts glowing. Ooh. He's kind of scary looking. And it wasn't really about that. It had this really beautiful, touching kind of thing where the monster sort of acts as a storyteller to help this boy work through his grief by sharing stories that appear at first to have nothing to do with his life, but really are lessons for what he's going through.
No.
Yeah. It's
already making me feel things.
It's really, really sweet. It's heartbreaking. Like, my heart felt like it had been just like mashed in a blender after this was over. But it's amazing, amazing, amazing movie. I think I actually cried so hard in this movie that like my sinuses swelled up and I had a headache at the end of the movie.
Aww.
Like, I can't breathe. Oh my God. I just had tissue all around me on the couch. But if you're not a parent, you might be better off than I am. It's just really hard as a parent to watch something like this. But really, the child actor, Lewis McDougall is his name. He was really great. And I think good child actors are really few and far between. I thought he was fantastic and I thought he was genius in this part. And it's a really, really hard part to play. And interesting to see Felicity Jones in a role like this after falling in love with her as Jin, which I am totally in love with Jin. So yeah, I have to recommend this. I don't know if either of you have read the book, but I know that this is a well-loved book.
I have only seen one trailer. I pretty much know pretty much nothing.
Yeah, I pretty much watched the trailer after you mentioned all the feels about it, and I'm glad you talked about it because that makes me want to see it more.
I think the trailer was actually done really well now that I've seen the film, because it told me enough to get a general idea of what it's about, but it did not give away like the depth of what this film really is. It's way more than you think it is. And Sigourney Weaver is amazing as usual, too. She plays the boy's grandmother, who he has a very strained, unhappy relationship with, and they sort of have to learn to live with each other with the situation that's happening. So yeah, she's incredible. It's an incredible movie, but you should have a lot of tissue handy because it's gonna kill you. My second recommendation is something that I kind of stumbled upon by accident this weekend because my phone died. Everybody knows because I've been whining about it all weekend. I'm sorry, Jackie.
No. I feel my so phone bad died. For you. Such a debacle.
Yeah, my phone died and, you know, I'm a tech person, so I went insane without my phone. When I took a shower, I usually listen to podcasts in the shower and I didn't have my phone, so I had to pull out my Kindle.
Oh no.
I can't live without a phone because I only have a Kindle to use instead. First world problems, right? So I popped into Audible, the Audible app, and they have channels in there, which I didn't know because I usually just use it for audiobooks. But they have these channels, and they have a channel called Damned Spot. It's a 4-part series about how violence changes a place.
Oh, wow.
I just want to read this introduction really quickly because this gives you kind of a quick little peek into it. It says, initially after a tragedy, our thoughts are with the victims and their families. We wonder how this could have happened. But after the scene is cleaned up, the bodies are removed, the holes in the walls are patched, something lingers. What do you do with a place where something terrible has happened? This surprised me a lot because I went into it kind of thinking, oh, this is probably going to be like ghost stories and stuff. It's not at all. It's literally about the people who have to go in and clean up a place and kind of like figure out how to sell it, how to market it, like how to get people to like it again. It goes into the psychology of like the victims' families and the people around it and like how they hold on to certain attachments and feelings about a location. Very much about the physical location.
That's really interesting.
It's really, really interesting. It's kind of like a true crime series. There's actual like interviews in here and they speak to people who are involved in different situations. So it's kind of like a true crime series, but also with some kind of psychology in it. Huh. They really delve into the psychology of like why people think that an empty building has something there long after people are gone, and it's not about ghosts or spirits or the idea of that. It's about the feelings that people attach to spaces. It's really interesting. I will say there's a content warning between each of the parts of the series, but just to back that up, yeah, it's the very first series jumps into a story about a McDonald's where there was a massacre. I think 22 or 23 people were killed.
Oh, geez.
And this McDonald's, and they go, that's their first delve into that, and it's pretty graphic. They speak to people who were there, they hear stories of what happened. So, content warning, if you have been through a traumatic experience like this, this might be a little bit too much.
Coincidentally, I've actually been thinking a lot about that topic lately because I've been watching Dexter again and just got to the point where, a traumatic murder happened in his house without giving anything away. Like, I kept thinking, well, how are they going to sell the house now? Like, this kind of sucks for them. And, the kind of shit that they're not going to talk about on the show because I guess not a whole lot of people want to hear it. But really, I am intrigued by what real estate agent is going to come in and try to sell this. And then, like, the thought of, because you have to disclose if a murder or violent crime happened at a house when it's listed, that's kind of superstitious, isn't it? Like, it's not like the same murderer's gonna come back to the same house unless you were literally in a Showtime show.
They actually talked to a realtor on the show who specializes in, he calls it, like, damaged properties or something he calls it. But they call him in, like, when they talk to the person who sold OJ's house after his wife was killed. People who that's their job is to like figure out how to change the way people think about a location.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Or just find the weirdos who would be super into that.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
Well, with houses, that's kind of what it is. And then with businesses, it's kind of more like a marketing strategy sort of thing where they have to like somehow twist the way you think so that you don't have certain attachments to a place. But yeah, super interesting. Really graphic, though. If I'd known it was going to go that far, I probably wouldn't have chosen it for, like, my Saturday morning listening while I was getting ready for work. That's gross.
That's
okay.
A bit intense.
Yeah. That's what I have. I think those are some good things to start us off, and we each kind of recommended a couple things that apply to our topic. So after we take a really quick break to refill our drinks, which tonight is whiskey night, so if you want to have a whiskey with us, go for it. We'll be right back and we'll talk about our topic for tonight, which is... it's horror for kids. That was really anticlimactic.
I'm sure they'll fix it in post.
Start us off here with horror for kids. I'd like to share a couple of quotes from Stephen Moffat on kids and how they interpret horror. The thing about children is that they are much more serious than we are. They are much more uncertain. Children live in a scarier, bigger world than we do. Imagine living in a world where everyone is taller than you. When was the last time you had to go into a school playground being shorter than people who can beat you up? Kids like being scared. Kids grade Doctor Who on scariness. They say it wasn't a very scary thing one week, which meant it wasn't very good. What they can find scary can sometimes be surprising. Obviously, that doesn't mean you're harrowing them or giving them a real-world monstrosity. We're giving them big red calamari.
But big red calamari?
Big red calamari.
The scariest thing imaginable.
The thing people never say about hiding behind the sofa is that hiding behind the sofa is fun itself. It is a fun thing to do. Kids like being scared of Doctor Who. It doesn't horrify them. It doesn't petrify them. It's just an enjoyable thrill. There's nothing wrong with a bit of adrenaline.
So today we're going to tear apart the topic of horror for kids, which is a huge one due to the large amount of material alone. I'm going to go ahead and say that, as usual, we'll be considering fantasy and sci-fi under the umbrella of horror for this discussion, especially since much of kids' horror is based on those genres. Horror for kids is the stuff of your childhood nightmares, the gateway drug to a lifelong love for the terrifying and horrific. What level of horror you may have enjoyed as a child will likely depend on your parents and whether they were fond of the scary stuff, and whether you were given the opportunities to test your own threshold for terror or carefully exposed in gentle little bits. I think most kids relate to horror based on the material or story setting the most, so that's a good way to jump into this, broken down in sub-segments of some of the most commonly used tropes or characters. For some of you, your first taste of horror may have been a clown, a monster under the bed story, a dark and damp basement scene, or a particularly nasty witch in the woods. Or maybe it was even an animated villain, like a flaming red bull who hunts unicorns. Whatever it was, if you're a horror fan now, you likely can think back to your childhood and remember a few moments when you first realized that being scared is exciting, and that you could find that rush in your books, movies, and TV shows. Setting the stage for the fandom. I've been reliving my childhood fears through my own kid, gleefully and carefully gauging his enjoyment of the ghosts and goblins that I imagined under my bed at night. And I actually want to just add on to this very quickly that before we started this tonight, I asked my son, who's 4, what his favorite scary movie is. And his response was, "I don't like scary movies because they're scary."
Take that, Mom!
And I had to explain to him that, you know, he loves a movie, an animated film called Nine, which I think was Tim Burton was a, I can't remember if he was a producer. Maybe. He also really loves Nightmare Before Christmas. He loves a lot of scary things. He just doesn't realize. And, you know, and we talked about this and I said, well, these are all scary things. And he said, well, those are fun, scary things. I said, you're right. Sometimes scary is fun. And he said, sometimes scary is not fun. It's just scary.
You're right. Well, so from his point of view, he doesn't like things that actually scare him.
I think he just hasn't associated yet that, you know, that he enjoys being scared sometimes. The movie Nine is quite scary. There's some really big, intense monsters in that, and it's quite dark and heavy. We were pretty surprised that he was interested in that because it was so scary. Coraline is another great example, I think, of...
Oh yeah,
it's pretty scary. I know adults who have seen Coraline and thought that it was a bit too strange for them and unsettling. But that's another one that he loves. So yeah, I just thought it was really interesting to kind of get his perspective and hear him say to me, you know, well, if it's scary, it scares me and I don't like it. But he obviously does really like scary things, and there's still a disconnection there between what scary really is. And maybe that's, you know, that's I think all of us, when you think back to those childhood moments, when you saw a movie or a show or read a book and you were scared and you may have thought, okay, that was terrifying, I don't want to do that again. But then you found yourself sort of reaching for the next thing that reminded you of that and was a little bit scary. So that's why it's kind of a gateway, you know?
Yeah, it's like watching super depressing documentaries on Netflix, which I'd never do at 4 in the morning. Like, on the one hand, you don't want to feel those feels, but you really want to feel those feels. Like, it's such a rush. Like, whether it's deeply depressing or horrific or terrifying, like, there's something kind of almost addictive about that little adrenaline rush that comes with something scary.
I've actually had a friend of mine ask me once, she doesn't like horror at all, and she once asked me one time why I enjoy horror. She said, I genuinely don't understand why people would want to be scared. And I explained it by saying it's an adrenaline rush. You know, it's just like she's a skydiver. And like you jump out of planes for an adrenaline rush.
That's scary as hell.
Right. I watch horror movies. I get an adrenaline rush. I don't have to jump out of an airplane and risk my life to do it.
I am baffled that she would ask. Like,
But I think it's, you know, yeah, I think it's
But that's a fun, scary thing. It's not a scary, scary thing.
Yeah, I guess it is really subjective.
Right, so I guess at some point when we move out of childhood into adulthood, we start to kind of draw really clear lines between what is scary and what is fun.
And then we end up with all these different subgenres of horror. So there's something awesome for everybody.
Sierra, do you remember what some of your earliest memories of being scared by something that you read or watched were?
Yeah, when I was little, I was really afraid of aliens, just in general. Going back to the, like, intro bits, talking about, like, it's so scary to be a kid because the world is so big. Learning that aliens could be a thing is, like, I don't care that the world is big, the universe is big, and they're coming for us, guys.
It's like you're just getting used to how big the world is, and then they throw the universe at you.
But aliens! And I remember seeing, I know I saw Mars Attacks probably a little too young, and I saw Aliens probably a little too young, thanks to my dad. And I definitely remember having some nightmares because of that, but, like, not bad enough to turn me off of it.
Those are two drastically different takes on aliens,
too. I know. Just proving the depth of that whole, like, idea.
The aliens could look like a blonde bombshell who doesn't move her feet when she walks, right? Mm-hmm. Or a giant monster with dripping fangs.
Yeah.
Jackie, what are some of your kind of earliest, do you know, can you think back to, like, your first scary movie or show?
The first scary movie I remember seeing was Watcher in the Woods. And I remember that terrified me because there was that idea of something always watching you and lurking in the shadows that you can't see, like a foe that you can't actually face. And it's one of those things I was actually reading a while back. And in fact, this is what made me bring up those Stephen Moffat quotes, is that a while back, I was reading how he was explaining that kids like to take apart problems, that they can handle certain horror aspects that adults can't really get into because they're not really sitting there for the jump scares. They're sitting there trying to pick apart the mystery, pick apart the problem. So I was thinking about that when you mentioned, you know, what things scared us in our childhood. And for me, it was always those things that I couldn't see, the things that I couldn't, like, directly wrap my brain around and throw my toys at or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think you could say that a common vein amongst a lot of horror is the unknown, whether it's aliens or whether it's something that's in the darkness, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is probably the most common thing with kids, especially with children.
Because monster in the closet.
Right. I mean, as adults, we kind of know too much, right? We can talk ourselves out of things. And I think adult horror definitely takes a turn for more reality-based things like serial killers, home invasion. But for children, it's always, it's always like something that you can't see or you can't quite reach, or the door is open and you can't get out of bed to close it.
Yeah, things you can't rationalize away.
I'm really bad at remembering things from my childhood. I just have this weird memory thing. But as far as I can remember, I'm pretty sure my dad and I watched a lot of weird, like, 70s era horror. And I think one of the first things I saw that really scared me was Watership Down, which was an animated film from 1978 about rabbits.
Mean bunnies.
Yeah, and I never read the book, but I mean, I guess it's, now as an adult, I realize it's got this whole kind of, like, heavy government aspect to it. Like, it's all military-based and government, and poor Hazel. Hazel was the nice rabbit, and he was trying so hard to help everybody, and he just had it so rough. And there was this kind of big, mean general bunny who had always had, like, stuff dripping off of his teeth and big claws, and it was really terrifying. And I remember a whole kind of drawn-out, like, sad song and scene about the rabbits dying. Do you remember that? With kind of, like, the ghost rabbits, like, dancing around, and they were kind of rolling through the tunnels.
Yeah, man, I don't even know how to verbalize what I'm thinking right now.
Well, I think that between the scariness of the rabbits and then also, like, that kind of seeing, like, death played out that way.
Yeah.
You know, and realizing, like, oh, they're not just little animals. Like, this is, like, a whole community of beings who are sort of just being flushed out of their homes violently and just kind of being faced with death that way. It was really terrifying.
Yeah, it's like the subject matter was almost kind of masked with the fact of using rabbits, but it really wasn't in terms of the actual mechanics of the whole situation. Mm-hmm. Like, it was still, it's kind of like how when Disney tackles a foe, they add in the joke character, they add in, like, all these, like, comic relief kind of things that can be rationalized away as just not something that's going to happen in reality. And then you have a story like Watership Down where, yeah, it's played out by animals, but it's, like, real shit that they're dealing with. Like, those animals really have to deal with honest-to-God fuckery here. Like, it's It sucks.
Well, and I think the story was supposed to be telling a rendition of a military coup, right? You have this mean, violent general, and then you have the kind of the people, the commoners that decide to overthrow him.
Yeah.
And try to rebel and save themselves. It's interesting. It's kind of like, what is that other one? Animal Farm? Was the other one?
Yeah.
Yeah, this kind of idea of like portraying a very adult, serious, heavy subject matter, playing it out in animals. I don't think I should have seen this when I was a kid as young as I did. I mean, I think all the theme of it was definitely over my head, but oh my God, I was terrified of these rabbits. So just so everybody knows, we're dealing with a little bit of technical difficulties tonight. So if our episode sounds a tad like we jumped in and out at some point in this conversation, it's because we did. But we're just gonna pick it back up and keep moving along.
Yeah, at least we noticed it during, while it was still fixable.
Yeah.
Instead of like afterwards being like, fuck, this is unusable.
Yeah, so forgive us, and we're gonna keep going with this conversation now because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. So we were just talking about kind of like our earliest memories of scary things that we watched and read. I'm wondering did you two have parents who enjoyed horror as well? Like, is that how you were kind of introduced to it? Or is this something that you did on your own?
So I had my dad was super into horror and my mom was not. So it was a good way of kind of rebelling a little bit, but then also like good dad bonding time.
Mm-hmm. I had the same situation. My dad was really into horror. My mom was not.
Yeah.
So one of the only things I remember bonding with my dad over was sitting down and watching scary movies.
Yeah, my mother was super into horror, but it was a little bit weird because she wasn't really that into letting us watch scary things, but then would throw these like wild Halloween parties with hundreds of kids from the neighborhood and like these really bizarre, creepy scenes and like little short plays and shit and like body parts floating in the pool kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, but we can't watch, you know, this easy little horror movie. That's fine. That's all right.
We can live it. We just can't watch it.
Yeah.
A subject that came up when I was talking to some people about this that I found interesting is, you know, when you mention to people horror for kids, I think a lot of people start thinking horror that's centered around kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, what they start associating with that. So it made me think of something, and that is when you have horror that centers around kids, like a few examples are It and Monster Squad, The Babadook, A Series of Unfortunate Events. These are all, the stories are based on the horror of the kids in the story. It's their terrible experiences. I think often it's not what most would consider safe for kids to watch, but it somehow rides a line between being for kids and for adults. So something I've been thinking about, and I'm curious what you two think. Do you think this approach is a way of kind of getting under the skin of adult viewers by sort of touching on the childhood fears they may have forgotten, like bringing us back to that place as a child of being afraid of the clown?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Like, because things that you were afraid of as a kid, you'd try to grow out of or, you know, face or overcome in some way, or just push to the back of your mind and hope you never actually see a giant spider in real life.
That's specific.
certainly no experience there. But yeah, if you see that come up as an adult, that definitely sends you into that feeling of the helpless little six-year-old that can't really do anything about the gigantic spider that's clearly in your closet and nobody's listening to you about right now. So yeah. That would definitely be a way to touch on a primal.
And it's also the difference fear. Of if you're a kid watching it, then you are projecting and you're like, I could be the hero of the story. But if you're an adult watching it, you're also like, oh God, I need to protect this little kid who's about to like walk into this dark closet that's full of ghosts and monsters or something. Or like, oh God, that kid won't be able to, like, get their parents into the room when the monster comes out from under the bed.
Yeah, or Melissa as a parent, I'm sure that lends a whole other level to that kind of thing.
For sure, for sure. But I mean, I'm thinking, like, when filmmakers sit down and kind of write these stories, right, or screenplay writers sit down and write these stories, and it seems like a sneaky and sort of manipulative way to make something extra terrifying for adults when you can sort of push you back into that place of being a child and remind you that you were afraid. One time you were afraid of a clown that lives in the sewer. Remember that? Like, one time, yeah. You know, or like the Babadook is an amazing example because, you know, when I saw the Babadook until recently, I thought of it from the viewpoint of the mother. Mm-hmm. You know, it's her horror story. But now when I think of it this way, it's kind of like it's the boy's horror story. Like, he was born into a situation where, you know, knowing that he's there, his father's not there, but he is. Mm-hmm. And his mother's falling apart day by day. And she's his lifeline, his safety space. And his safe space is falling apart. And the horror is presented to him in the form of a children's book, which is normally a very safe and happy thing that brings something, you know, the bedtime story when you get to sit down with your parent and kind of have that little cuddly moment at the end of the day. And it's, you know, that's where the bad guy gets in. Which is really scary to think about that. Like, for kids, that's kind of like their check-in moment when they sit down, at the end of the day and kind of like cuddle up and say, okay, we're going to read this nice little story together. And the boogeyman lives in the story. And his mother lets him in, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a trope, but a kind of approach to horror that I hadn't thought about until now, and sort of trying to pick this apart and like, why do so many horror films revolve around kids and revolve around, you know, kids as your protagonists, and even when they're not necessarily appropriate for smaller kids to see or to watch.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. I like that. I'm gonna keep that in mind with the next movie I watch that lends itself to that.
So let's talk about horror stories, movies, and games at sleepovers. I didn't do a lot of sleepovers when I was young, at least that I remember. Maybe I did. I don't know. I talked in my sleep a lot, especially when I slept at friends' houses. So
I think it became embarrassing
that I was the horror at my friend's sleepovers because I talked all night long. Did you guys have that kind of experience where you were into horror as a kid and you kind of did that at sleepovers, or was that something that you sort of kept at home?
I totally did. That was like when friends were having a sleepover and we could finally watch a horror movie instead of like painting nails or something, I was like, yes, this is my time to shine. I'm gonna tell everybody all I know about ghosts.
I don't think I had a lot of friends that were really into watching horror movies and stuff like that, but they did ask me to tell ghost stories a lot now that I think about it. I think I was that, you know, the creepy one that sat there and read scary stories to tell in the dark and shit. And like, I was the one you invited to the camp out so that I could sit there with a flashlight up angled around the campfire and scare the shit out of you before bed.
And while we were preparing for this, I realized that a lot of the horror that I ingested when I was a kid was in books, and it was a very solitary kind of thing. And so in these moments at sleepovers where we could like watch a horror movie or play like turn off all the lights and go hide and kind of scare ourselves kind of games were like just really precious moments of all of my friends kind of understanding this thing that I've been obsessing over that I feel like I'm an expert in now.
Yeah.
And, like, you guys don't even know what can of worms you're opening.
It's like, you guys are into the Babysitter's Club. Yeah. Let me show you Goosebumps.
I didn't do it as a kid, but I did as a teenager. I had a group of three girls that I grew up with from like primary school, and I was the girl when we were teenagers that would drag all of them into the cemetery or convince somebody to climb into the window of an abandoned house with me. You're like, come on, we can do it. There's nothing in there. Come on, we can totally do it. Always kind of just hoping that something would fall or something would scare them, and getting a really kind of sick joy out of watching my friends scream and... I remember
go running.
Yeah, a friend of mine owns an amazing. She's got this. Her family has the oldest family home to be consecutively owned by the same family in the United States.
That's crazy.
Oh wow.
Yeah, this big old house that sits on the Hudson River. They used to find like arrowheads and, you know, very Native American things kind of washed up off on the shores there. They've got a family cemetery behind the house. The house doesn't actually have a functioning bathroom. They still use outhouses. Yeah. It's got modern outhouses, which just kind of means
good
like
for them.
One that's new and doesn't smell as bad, but it's kind of used more like a summer home by the family. So everybody goes and stays there. But we spent a lot of time there as teenagers. We would spend the night, and she has all these old uncles who would tell us ghost stories. And I remember when Jackie reminded me of this, there's a pool room, and we played pool one night, and I found these, they had these really old poetry books on the wall, on the shelf. And there's a room, if you come out of the pool room and you go up a little staircase, there's a bedroom at the top of the stairs that everybody calls the blue room. It's painted all blue, and there's all these ghost stories about the house, and apparently, according to the family, that was the most haunted room in the house, in the blue room, that you would hear all kinds of noises. So I remember one night, us playing pool, probably having some drinks after the parents went to bed, and I stood up on a stool and decided to entertain my friends by reading this creepy poetry that I found in this book. And, like, reading it out loud. And we did actually hear, like...
Haven't you seen horror movies before?
I know, but that's the kind of kid that I was. It was like, I'm gonna try to make this happen. I do remember actually hearing some kind of a moan, like a sound, come from upstairs. And my friends were terrified, slammed the door shut. Nobody wanted to go out into the hallway. We're like, we're just gonna sleep in this room on the pool table. And they still talk about it. And it was just me kind of being like, oh, you guys are scared? Okay, let me do this other thing that's going to be even more scary.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but that was always just fun. I guess it just, you know, once you're a horror person and you kind of, you start to love that rush, right? Mm-hmm. Even as a kid, you always kind of are that person.
Well, and when I was a little kid, I was super proud of myself for liking horror. Like, I thought that I discovered something that everybody else just hasn't figured out yet. And so I was like, yeah, I go to the library and I get the books with the scary covers. Like, I'm so cool. I'm a girl and I'm doing this.
So what do you guys think about, we talked about kind of like why horror is made based around kids for adults and why that would affect adults and why screenplay writers would do that sort of thing. So what do you think is the point of making horror for kids? Like, folk tales and fairy tales are all, they've been scary forever, right? We have things like mm-hmm. Hansel and Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood. Like, we've been scaring kids forever. It's kind of instilled in our history. So what do you think it's like to keep kids out of trouble, or do you think it's kind of to keep them from doing things that we don't want them to do? I mean, isn't there a better way to scare kids out of going into the woods, right, than telling them that an old lady's going to eat them, cook, put them in an oven and eat them?
Don't talk to strangers. They might murder you.
Yeah. I definitely think there are different purposes and layers to it. Like, there's definitely the, you know, the parable kind of tales that, you know, mm-hmm. you don't want a kid to do a certain thing. You don't want them to wander off. So you tell them stories about these kids that were mangled while running off, obviously.
Little boy played hooky that day.
Because getting lost isn't enough, right?
He went into the woods and soon lost his way.
Yeah. Like, if you tell a kid, hey, don't do that, what are they going to do? They're going to do that. That's what they're going to do, is that. But if you tell them, this one kid lost his damn arm doing that, then they're probably going to back off a little bit. But I also really think it was just a solid form of entertainment. Like...
Like, messing with kids is the entertainment?
Well, not just messing with kids, but just telling them stories in general. Back when a lot of these fairy tales were made up, it's not like they could, you know, just flip on Netflix or some shit. So they had to make up stories. And, I mean, that's got to progress from a once upon a time there was this princess and she was boring and had no personality, the end, to once upon a time there was this princess and she ate people.
Yeah.
You know? It's got to grow. Your audience is going to get bored. You got to give it some dimension there. And horror stories are suspenseful. They, you know, keep you on the edge of your seat. They keep you entertained. So mm-hmm. I definitely think that's just the natural progression there for storytelling.
I want to do like a scientific study of kids that are into horror and also kids that think, like, see themselves as adults in a way. Because I feel like kids who grew up on Goosebumps and those kinds of things think of themselves as the hero who's going to save the day and, like, save everybody from trouble, which is the kind of thing that adults are supposed to do.
Like, they end up more mature and more grown up than their peers,
kind
of thing.
There, because that's totally how I saw myself as a little kid. Like, I'm tapped into something that nobody else understands, and I'm going to fix it. I'm going to save everybody.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
And I'm going to take care of everybody.
I definitely remember, like, other people getting scared at mundane shit and me being like, ugh, yeah, you're such a baby.
Grow
up. Oh, my God.
I remember going through a thing where my son, probably when he was around 2, was that kind of kid that would run away all the time out in public. He was never afraid of being alone, so he would just take off and run and not look, not turn around and look. So I tried for a while, I tried to kind of like convince him of why he shouldn't do that without scaring him, because I thought, I don't want him to be scared that like everybody around us are bad people when we go out, you know?
That's a fine
line. But it didn't work. I mean, I eventually had to like just tell him, listen, there's bad people and they will take you and run away with you. Like, I just had to, like, level with him. Be like, bad people will steal you, and you won't be able to find your mom anymore. Do you want that to happen?
Oh.
And I felt bad, but it's, like, it was the only thing, like, I think you're right, Jackie. It was the only thing that kind of, like, got through. You know, I had to scare him a little bit. And maybe that's also kind of right for what Sierra's saying, because now I have the kid that's kind of, like, you know, we have to constantly tell him, like, he's playing and these people are always killing each other. We're like, Max, no, he doesn't kill people.
Let's tone it down a little bit.
Yeah, like, he's playing Batman and he's like, he's gonna kill the Joker. He's gonna kill him. Like, no, he doesn't kill people. Batman doesn't like to kill people. He just gets them arrested. Just sends them to the policeman. But sometimes he kills them. Like, okay, please just calm down. You know, so now he just, I think he feels really, like, he likes the kind of challenge of, like, I'm gonna say this thing that's scary to the grown-ups. Mm-hmm. Or going to school and telling his friends that he wants to play zombie and he's gonna eat them, you know. Like,
yeah,
he just kind of pushes the limits now. So I wonder if both of you are right in that aspect a little bit.
Yeah, it also seems like it would be the kind of thing that you could even empower kids with, in terms of putting kids in that story, like Hansel and Gretel shove the witch in the oven, so, you know, kids can do anything if they set their mind to it, like, grow up and be awesome or not some shitty kid. But I don't know, it seems like there would be multiple layers to it. I think it's honestly a nice progression just for storytelling in general.
Well, and there's also a certain, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that the kids just don't get, you know, like, you can tell them something scary and they know that it's scary, but they don't acknowledge, like, the reality of what happens when you get kidnapped, you know?
Yeah.
They just think, oh, I won't be able to find my mom and, like, get a snack when I want one, or, you know? So it takes a while before the reality of that.
Yeah, it just goes to, like, I'm going to get put into a van, and then
I don't want to be in a van.
That's the big scary part.
What if I don't have my mittens with me, you know? Yeah. So I think there's a certain extent of, like, they don't get the full reality of it. And then it's interesting, because then as we become adults, again, that horror becomes more realistic. Mm-hmm. The horror material has to be more realistic, because now we're not afraid of the things that aren't reality anymore.
Yeah, we can disassociate imaginary shit from something that will actually hurt us.
Yeah, and I think this is a good place to kind of transition into another question that we had here, which is, where is the line in children's horror? How far is too far? Which I can say, as a parent, this is really, really hard to answer. All kids have different kind of thresholds of, you know, we've had movie parties over here with 4-year-olds, and I know kids that are afraid of Disney villains, or kids that are afraid of dinosaurs that growl too loud, you know? I mean, the threshold is very different. We just tried to watch the Ghostbusters remake a few days ago with Mac. We thought, oh, he's going to love this. Like, he was terrified. The first ghost showed up and he...
That's interesting.
He won't do it. He actually sees the cover of the movie now and he says, I don't like that movie. That movie scares me too much. I'm like, okay, we're not going to show it to you again. He keeps reminding me that he doesn't like the movie.
Yeah, that seems like something that's highly subjective. I wouldn't even know how to approach that if I were a parent. Like, I'd just be like, why don't you make a list of things you're too scared by and we'll work with that.
I mean, some of it is obvious, right? You don't want kids to see, like, heads being chopped off and kind of like brutal violence sort of things. Obviously you don't want kids to see, like, sexual violence or anything like that. But let's, you know, like, you take Monster Squad as a good example. Not super violent, I don't think, but my gosh, there's a lot of cursing in that movie.
Yeah, it was a different time.
And it's not, you know, it's not that my kid doesn't hear cursing, because my house, we are not good about, you know, keeping that under wraps. But when they hear it in a movie, or they hear anything in a movie that they enjoy, then they're going to repeat it. So then becomes a fun thing that person in the movie said.
Yeah. It's kind of like how ratings work and Like, it's a committee that nobody really knows the names of, and there's no really specific set guidelines for what's going to get an R rating or PG-13 or PG. Yeah. But it's very subjective and based around what these group of people, some of them are just, you know, soccer moms living in Los Angeles,
well,
think are going to be too scary or too much for a certain audience to handle.
And it seems like the rules get made once somebody complains about it. So, like, yeah. Once we kind of push the line too much, and then we have to, like, reel it back in. Like, oh, okay, I guess we can't do that anymore because too many people complained.
That's got to be really difficult for, like, directors who are specifically trying to hit a target rating that, you know, kids can go see, but adults and kids will still enjoy. Is, you know, where's that line and how do we push it without going over it kind of thing.
I imagine that that is going to be more difficult around, I'd say, probably like 10, you know, like it seems like 8, 9, 10 is kind of the age where kids are being exposed to more mature material, even outside of movies and things. But in reality, they're kind of, and they're acknowledging and understanding more adult things at that point. So it's kind of very blurry. I can only imagine at that point, if you have a kid who's interested in horror, but you don't necessarily want to, like, you know,
know everything.
Right.
You can see those lines being pushed, it seems, in kid shows. And in fact, something that is on our list tonight is directly related to that. Like, Sierra and I were having a conversation a while back of the really fucked up things that end up in kids shows.
The stuff that you don't realize is super like messed up until you watch it later on in life. And then you're like, wow, that's dark.
I did not catch on to that
like, when I was little.
Didn't Gremlins originally have a death in it and they took it out? Because they decided.
I don't remember.
I think Ryan had told me that a while back, that they originally had a death scene in it and then they took it out because they decided that they wanted to market it towards kids more.
Well, there's a lot of, like, gremlins getting put in the microwave and exploding. There's a lot of those kinds of deaths.
Yeah.
But if it's the death of a fictional creature, it seems like it's a lot easier to handle than a human. Or, like, when something really terrifying is put into cartoon form, rather than being acted up by humans, it's a completely different ballgame. Yeah. Like, the specific things that Sierra and I were talking about there, the Lich in Adventure Time is one that really blows my mind. It is honestly just the most metal story arc I've ever fucking seen. And it's in a kid's show. And it's so weird. And that's why I was so obsessed with making a really cool Lich costume for Halloween, is the character is, it's based on Norse mythology, this undead king who rules an army of zombies. And his only purpose is to destroy all life in the universe. And there he is, chilling with Finn and Jake in the fucking Adventure Time stories, you know, crazy ripped apart skull face and like green flames shooting everywhere. And it's like, how is this happening in a kid's show? This is so cool.
Well, and even something like Steven Universe, which isn't horror, but it really touches on a ton of like super complex issues of gender and all of that kind of stuff. And like, I wonder if kids are super getting that and if they are like absorbing that level of depth in it, or if it's just, these are fun characters, these are pretty colors.
Yeah. And like, you brought up Cubone. Tell me again about Cubone.
Cubone's my favorite Pokemon. Jackie doesn't know anything about Pokemon, so I was just explaining
nothing
some things about it, like these are the things you need to know. And the number one thing you need to know is that there's a Pokemon named Cubone. And there's another Pokemon called Kangaskhan, which is like a kangaroo with a little Joey in its pocket. And the like mythology, the lore around it is that if the Kangaskhan dies, the little Joey wears its mother's skull and becomes a Cubone and is just lonely and sad forever. And you never see what's actually like underneath the skull after that point on. And it evolves. He's
just walking around wearing dead mother's hair.
And it evolves into a totally different Pokemon from that point. Like, it just changes it forever.
Like, it's honestly terrifying when you actually get into the subject matter. But then, I know, you look at the picture, it's like, damn, that's an adorable monstrosity.
We recently have been, probably a bad parenting choice, exposing Max to Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, yeah.
Because just something came over us and we decided that I think we missed watching it. So. But it, you know, and I thought, oh, this is fun and silly and goofy. But now going back and watching them, I realized there's some serious, like, psychological violence happening, you know? And just to watch a kid, like, for the first time, see Ren just, like, lose his shit completely and scream at his friend and, like, walking around with a hammer, like, to beat him on the head with. And just like, oh, this is not quite what I remembered because I never really acknowledged it as a parent before, you know? Like, I see things a little differently now. And the sad part, I think, is that all those kind of like adult things that go over your head as a kid, you mm-hmm. know, by the time you get old enough to catch those, there's usually this long period of time, right, where you don't like you don't want to watch that stuff anymore because it, you already did it. So you have to, it's like when you're like 30 or 40 years old, you go back and you go, oh, I never understood that that's what that was about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really crazy how much intricacies are in these strange ass kids shows. Like, all right, this is gonna be a weird thing to mention, but one time I did illicit drugs and watched The Lion King
and you saw the universe.
This was like 5 years ago. No, maybe longer, I don't know. It was recent enough that I should have known better, but it was, I was old enough to like really get what's going on, and I was just like bawling for hours. I was like, how do they show this to kids? This is so upsetting and so horrifying. That's one of the
most brutally violent Disney films out there.
And it's so mean. Scar just lets him go.
It's terrible. Patricide, like, they convince the poor boy that he killed his own father. Yeah, it's messed up. I think it's, you know, yeah, it's interesting. And then you start to think of, like, there's all different lines to think about, you know? Is there the line of, right, like physical violence, there's lines of psychological violence or psychological manipulation, there's lines in sexual content, there's lines in so many, there's the lines are kind of like different and all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like hitting a character over the head with a hammer is okay, but showing blood squirt out of their head afterwards.
Right, exactly. Like, think about classic Looney Tunes, right? Like, they're just beating the crap out of each other constantly. But you didn't
with like chainsaws and shit. They weren't fucking
around. Right, but you didn't see like their brains falling out or anything, you know?
Yeah.
Which is kind of where Ren and Stimpy takes it to a whole different place of like, oh, I'm going to pull your spine out of your mouth and then hit you in the head with it, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know where the line is. And I think the line is different according to, this is going to sound really boring and parental, but I think the line is different according to like ages and individual mm-hmm. kid. For me, dealing with a 4-year-old, it's kind of like, what's not realistic? That's kind of my line. Is like, is it a realistic ghost? Or is it a realistic monster? Or is it something that's kind of goofy and cartoony?
Yeah.
And that kind of moves the line for him of like where it's too scary.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure that a lot of like his friends that are his age can't handle nearly the spooky stuff. He can.
We actually had an argument tonight over Jack Skellington and whether he's a skeleton. I'm like, Max, his name is Skellington. He's a skeleton. No, he's not. He's the king. I'm like, and he's a skeleton. He doesn't even acknowledge that he's a skeleton. Like, skeletons are scary. I know. And he's supposed to be scary. But I'm sorry that you don't find him scary, but he's a skeleton. And his entire town is full of scary things. And we had to, like, go through the song, remember? The guy under the bed with the things in his hair and the guy under the stairs. And they're all scary things. Just staring at me like I'm making things up. I'm like, it really is a whole movie about scary things.
So I think
it's literally the whole point.
Going back to what's the point of making horror for kids, I think is, like, to demystify those scary things, too.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the scary thing, like, especially young, like, picture books and things that I was super into, it was like, this is a monster who's afraid of people and he can't sleep at night because he's so scared. But
that's
then,
true.
Yeah, so it's like, you don't have to be afraid of the monsters, they're more afraid of you. Or like Monsters, Inc. and they're just trying to scare you to, like, fill their quota or whatever.
A lot of, like, so humanizing to just, like, the calm monsters.
You down. Yeah.
Like, be able to relate to them. I think we have a book called Goodnight Monster. It's just like a mom telling her, getting her kid ready for bed, and they're monsters, you know, and she's brushing his teeth with worms or something. I can't remember.
I was really into a book called The Monster Bed, which is about a monster named Dennis. and he's scared that there are people under his bed. Which I would be afraid if there are people under my bed.
I think I'd be more afraid of people under my bed.
Monster or human, it's kind of scary to think of people hiding under your bed.
Either way.
we kind of talked about how it feels being, Sierra kind of shared with us how it feels being a little girl and liking horror. Do you think that horror was something, maybe it felt like it was reserved for boys?
Kind of. In my perspective there, it wasn't specifically horror was geared toward boys, but things that were tougher to handle were geared toward boys. As in, girls were a little bit too delicate to handle. Yeah.
That's funny.
And I was like, honestly, we deal with a lot more blood than you guys do, so like,
yeah,
what is even the point there?
Well, I feel like at least with a lot of like children's toys and things, like boys get the gross snot monsters and girls get princesses. So when I was like, I'll take the monster, please. That was like an act of rebellion.
Talking with a friend the other day about how, like, I have an older brother. He's a couple years older than I am. And when we were kids, he would have all the coolest shit. Like, he had this really awesome Castle Grayskull from He-Man that would, like, open up. And there are, like, rooms and Skeletor's, like, chilling there. And he glows in the dark and stuff. Meanwhile, I had, like, 3 Easy Bake Ovens that never made it out of the box. It's like that stuff's pretty lame. Like the stuff that's marketed, I don't know if it is the same nowadays. I actually think it's changed a lot these days. Melissa, I'm sure you can speak to this. Back in the 80s and 90s, for sure, cool, creepy, scary toys were definitely marketed more toward boys. Now I know there's like Monster High and shit, and I look at those and I'm like, why wasn't that around when I was a kid?
It's still spooky, but it's still very feminine.
Cutesy spooky.
There's a little bit,
like, these are girls and they have their own personalities, but like specific personalities. Like, she's the brainy one and she's the sporty one.
There's a little bit. I mean, I think you get that mainly when you get into like franchises, right? Because most franchises can kind of be adapted or enjoyed by boys and girls. Like, there's a Star Wars aisle now in every store. You know, there's a Lego aisle. Those things are kind of gender neutral, but you still have, like, if you go into the younger kids section, like where the younger toys are, there's a very distinct, there's an aisle for little girls that is dominated by pink and purple things and often has a lot of like housekeeping brooms and things like that, you know, like housekeeping,
cleaning,
like,
and baking.
Yeah, like play costumes. And right. And then there's the boys aisle that has a lot of like
trucks
and blocks and superheroes. Yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Which,
I remember,
that's a whole other discussion.
Right, right. That's a whole other episode and a half.
Yep.
I remember as a kid, I had 2 sisters and I always wanted, I don't remember where I saw it, but there was somebody that I knew, a friend of ours, who had these really cool action figures. I think some of them might have been Spawn.
Ooh, cool.
And they were kind of like alien action figures with tentacles and like monstrous looking things. And I remember always feeling very envious of those and sort of having the idea that, like, not that I couldn't play with them, but that I wouldn't ever get them. You know, like, those weren't going to end up under my Christmas tree. I could play with them if there was a little boy around who had them and I could play with him. You know?
Yeah.
But there was definitely kind of that separation that developed of like, oh, my mom's not going to give me those alien toys.
Yeah. I remember getting just a ridiculous amount of Barbies and was like, I'm not into this. And my brother would get like all the coolest toys. Like, he had this like all metal Voltron where every piece came apart and then he'd yell at me for playing with it. I'm like, but it's
wait,
cool.
Do you see the stuff that I got stuck with?
But I wanna.
I never got Barbies, but I think because my sister had Barbies and I took them one time and I cut all of their hair off.
Yeah, I did.
I got in a lot of trouble.
I got in trouble for like trading my Barbie stuff to the other playground, like to the other kids in the neighborhood.
You had a business going on?
So I would, so I'd like give them the good stuff and my mom would be like, don't give your stuff away. I bought that for you.
I think I may have buried a Cabbage Patch doll in the yard one time.
Nice. Well, because it'll go into cabbages.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll you could both a cabbage bulb and come right out of there.
She got the plague. She's going to get stinky and rot. We need to put her in the ground. I think, I mean, we sort of talked about the We sort of talked about the rollover between adult and kids things, and I just want to touch on Pixar because somebody, I'm not sure if Sierra was, added this in. Did you add that in, Sierra?
Yeah, well, because I feel like Pixar does a good job of, like, tapping into the underlying fear of, like, I am afraid of being lost and alone and not having... not only my parents, but, like, any friends or anything like that. Like, those are real fears that...
or anyone you love.
Yeah, those are fears that, like, everybody can relate to. That part of it is definitely relatable for adults, but then it also has the funny jokes that are like, that's a sex thing, and I get it now that I'm an adult, but I didn't get that when I was a kid.
And I think that's what makes those kind of things rewatchable and really successful, is when you have, like, the kids' movies that also have some over-your-head adult content. Like, if you compare, that's the big thing, right? I think if you compare between Pixar and Disney, not just the fact that Pixar, in my opinion, has a bit more heart than Disney mm-hmm. on its own, but I think that Disney sort of gets into that weird, like, pop references and sort of kiddie references, but they don't really do anything that you can really enjoy as an adult. So it just feels like a straight up kids movie, you know, where Pixar is like, you can find something to latch onto in any of those films, whether you're 4 or whether you're 10 or whether you're 30 or 40. So we saw recently Moana.
Oh yeah,
we went and saw that.
Oh, how was it? I haven't seen it.
It's a great movie. The songs were beautiful, the characters are great, but very classic Disney, you know. Every song sounded like a Disney song, like you've heard it before. And you compare that to the last animated film I saw, which was Kubo and the Two Strings. And Kubo and the Two Strings is a mind-blowing, like, epic kind of tale of all kinds of things. Max watched it and enjoyed it as a kid because there were scary things and, you know, there were stories of a hero. The little boy is a hero. I know he particularly latches on to stories that have, like, a child who's a hero, mm-hmm. kind of relates to that. And it was also at the same time a story of, you know, a parent struggling to be a parent and, you know, had this really, like, kind of heavy, like, morality story behind it of life and death that was completely over his head. And that's what I mean, like, that kind of movie's gonna have a lot more longevity. I actually sat down and watched that one with Ryan, just two of us, and we enjoyed it, just two adults together, you know. And we're just as impressed by it way. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I just had to mention Pixar in there because I think Pixar does a really amazing job of writing that line.
What you mentioned there actually made me think of something else. Songs in kids shows and kids movies and things, even when there's a horror aspect going on, seems like it makes things a little bit easier to accept and a little bit easier to just wrap their head around. Mm-hmm. One reason I'm just so enamored with things like Adventure Time and Steven Universe is because of Rebecca Sugar and the way she writes songs. Like, she can express, like, really complex gender issues in a 45-second song. I don't know how much that gets through to a lot of kids. My nephews don't like Steven Universe, so whatever. But it seems like that kind of thing that just makes it a little bit easier for kids to swallow and to really relate to. And, you know, they've got a catchy tune that they can sing along to. And, yeah.
Did either of you, just to kind of get off, we've been focusing a lot, I think, on movies.
Oh, yeah.
And TV. Yeah. So let's get the kind of, before we wrap this up, let's, I think, talk a little bit about books. And I wanted to bring up, there's a comic book series in particular that I wanted to talk about called Lenore, the Cute Little Dead Girl. I don't know if either of you had a chance to watch any of those animated shorts that I sent to you.
No, but I used to read the comics.
I think that is a great kind of example of that, too, where it's obviously a scary story. It's about a dead girl who comes back to life. You know, her neighbor is made up of taxidermy parts stuck together. Her best friend is a little stuffed animal who actually has the soul of a vampire trapped inside of him. It's just a really screwed up story. And she basically drags a dead cat around with her everywhere. Well, I think they usually start out as alive cats, but they don't stay alive very long. She's not very good with cats.
That's worse.
So yeah, it's very, like, it's a very chilling story, but it's like really, really cute and sweet. And I think that that's that kind of story that, you know, if you handed it to, like, an 8, 9, 10-year-old, they would really get a kick out of the fact that this is a story about death, but it's also really cute and funny and quirky and adorable. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of introduce that, you know, that subject matter in a way that's not terrifying, but also they would recognize it as being something that's scary.
Right. Something that reminds me of is like Edward Gorey and things like the Gashly Crumb Tinies. Yeah, we're really like going through the alphabet and there's all these like horrific ways that these kids died, but it's also fun and, you know, it's familiar because it's the alphabet. it's like a nice little segue between here's what you learned in school today. Here's a way to remember it.
Like I mentioned,
falls into the category of like it's cool because it's creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've mentioned on here before The Dangerous Alphabet, which was written by Neil Gaiman, which I have to read to you guys on the show sometime.
Mm-hmm. We should do that as one of our readings.
That's a really great book. Where the Wild Things Are is an interesting kind of entry into this, too, because it's not, I think, what most people think of as horror.
Yeah, but it's still monsters.
Still monsters. Yeah. And they're pretty... I've read that book over a million times now, and it's still, you know, they're ghastly teeth and they're... big eyes and their gnarly claws and, you know, they're very like raucous kind of like rawr sort of monsters. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're Monsters Inc. like happy monsters, you know. If we want to touch on just briefly, I know Sierra and I don't know, Jackie, if you've watched it yet, A Series of Unfortunate Events.
No, not yet. I
it's
saw
so good.
I haven't seen the new one, I should specify. Yeah. The movie I saw is the old movie. Garbage.
We've talked about the show. I think both of us have recommended it now. We've talked about the show. Sierra, did you read the books?
Yeah, I did.
So did you read them as an adult or did you read them as a child?
I read them in like middle school kind of time.
So how did you feel about that story kind of as compared to how you feel about it now as an adult?
I love the Netflix TV adaption version of it, especially as somebody who like read it. And I'm not very good at remembering books after I've read them. So I feel like it hits on just enough of the story that I remember to be like the nostalgia kind of bits of it, but then still be really interesting and engaging and fun. But then like the movie version of it was trying to fit way too much of all of the stories into such a short amount of time and not really doing any of it justice. So I think that the Netflix version is a really good format for that because they can dive into things a lot more and pay them the like amount of time that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a fun book to have read because at first, I wasn't going to read it when I was a teenager because I was like, guys, I read Stephen King. I'm a little above this. but my best friend, Kiana, was super into them. And so it was a good way to like bond with that friend over something creepy and a little spooky while still like I'm kind of a snob.
I just realized there's something pretty huge that none of us actually put on our reference material list here. That we skipped over. What's Harry that? Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Which is like, you know.
I did think about that.
More in the fantasy realm, but there are some really terrifying monsters.
There's some scary bits.
In that story. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read the books yet. I'm hoping to read them with Max when he's a little bit older, but we have watched a couple of the movies. And what I found interesting is, you know, he really loves the troll. The troll who kind of shows up in the bathroom, and I thought that would be scary, and he didn't think it was scary at all. He was kind of like, yeah, get him, and he was like cheering on Hermione, you know, and was really excited. But he was absolutely terrified of the book in The Prisoner of Azkaban, the book that has the teeth.
Mm-hmm. The monster book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to the point where we had to shut the movie off, and he talked about it for 2 days after.
Wow.
Like, I don't like the book. I don't like the book with the teeth. I don't want to watch that movie. So, interesting kind of...
You never know what it's going to be.
That's been a tricky one for me. I really want to enjoy Harry Potter, but I'm never quite sure, like, if the monster's going to be too much. And each one has sort of its... There's what the... Isn't there, like, the two-headed... The dogs?
The dog, yeah.
Right?
Fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's and then there's all the stuff with Voldemort. Like the snake becomes much more aggressive as the movies go on and much more nasty and evil and terrifying.
Yeah, and the actual like individual little monsters like that aren't even the main monsters of the story. So that's
I think the storyline of kind of Voldemort and the family stuff, it would go over, you know, a young kid's head. I think that's the kind of like 8 to 10 year olds who will catch on to what they're talking about with like the murder of the parents. I think a lot of that stuff would go over the head of a younger kid.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, it's children being put in peril and some really scary monsters.
But then when you were reading it as a kid, you still wished that you would get your letter.
Yeah.
So even though it was terrifying, you imagined yourself being there and you super wanted to be a wizard.
Yeah, there's still that intriguing. It's the world of magic. Like, who doesn't want to be in the world of magic?
I have a hard time remembering reading horror before Stephen King. I think he's the first, like, horror that I remember for literature.
Before I could even read, my mom and I would go to thrift stores, and she would buy me Goosebump books just because I liked the covers of them. So I had a huge collection of Goosebump books, like, by the time I was ready to read chapter books.
That's cool.
And those were things that it's like, this the hero of the story is a 12-year-old kid, and they're getting things done. And they know everything, and the parents know nothing.
I think I always associate Tim Curry with a lot of the monsters of my childhood, too. It's because he, you know, he stood out as so many between Pennywise the Clown. And then I don't know if you two saw Legend, but there was the movie Legend where he played the demon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the devil. And which is still to this day one of my favorite like makeups.
Yeah, it's like the quintessential devil.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And then who else am I thinking? There was the, I think it was called The Worst Witch.
Sounds really old movie.
And he was kind of like, I think he played like the head of the school or something. He was like a wizard. And that, and he was a really bad guy. But I always feel bad because he's so amazing. But yeah, it's called The Worst Witch. Firuza Balk is in it, and Tim Curry plays the Grand Wizard. Wow, now that I see pictures of this, I'm like, this is kind of like the original Harry Potter. he was a pretty nasty guy in there. So I think I always remember his face when I think of childhood horror stuff too. So we've touched on, like, we have a huge list of movies. I don't think we need to go through all of these, but some of the probably the heavy hitters for most people would be Stephen King. We even talked about, when I was trying to come up with these ideas, Steven Spielberg, because he was kind of like the intro to like family friendly horror.
I'm also surprised.
Yeah,
and there's a bunch of people like as adults who are like,
yeah,
no, I'm afraid of E.T. That thing is creepy.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is like fair. Well, because it's that one scene where he's, like, lying in the water and he's all white and gross.
Yeah.
Like, I have definitely had a nightmare about
that.
Well,
I mean, I think between E.T. and, like, Encounters of the Third Kind. Yeah,
Close
like,
Encounters
the, I think
kind.
In that era, it seemed like the alien thing was very, you know.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And also kids being the hero. Yeah.
So I think Steven Spielberg sort of started the, like, the family-friendly, like, vanilla version of horror for a lot of people. And we can't skip over Jim Henson, because for me, I think Jim Henson was a huge, like, gateway into scary things.
He's definitely a horror gateway.
Between
drug.
The Dark Crystal, the Labyrinth. What else am I thinking? I mean, even the Muppets are kind of scary sometimes.
Well, they're monsters, and like Fraggles.
Fraggle Rock.
That's like a good thing for like toddlers to like be okay with monsters and like not be scared of things.
I feel
like
there's like huge, important Jim Henson ones that I'm forgetting right now, but I think The Lost Boys was probably a big one that we all saw at a pretty young age.
I wasn't allowed to watch that until I was like 13 or so.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then I didn't realize what the big deal was.
The Neverending Story was probably one of our first, right? It was more fantasy, but then you had this like that wolf. How many kids were terrified of that wolf when you see, I always forget his name, but peering out of the dark cave.
With the eyes, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty terrifying.
Oh, one that's not on our list, Wizard of Oz and the Witch. I feel like when I was maybe 4 or something, like, being like, this is kind of
scary.
Yeah,
we pull that one out every now and then in our like, house, and we watch
witch,
it.
Like, melt.
And I realize even now watching it how scary she was. She's just so intense and angry.
But it's kind of like wrapped up in this very like nice kind of fairy tale story.
Fun side note, I used to be able to do a perfect Wicked Witch of the West laugh, like the cackle. I don't know, I haven't done it in years. It's so loud, like people would call the cops. I live in a city.
The movie The Gate was a big one for me too. Did you guys see The Gate?
I haven't seen that.
I have to look it up because I can't remember the name. I want to say Stephen Dorff was in it. Yeah, he was. Can't believe I remember that. Stephen Dorff was in it. It was about these two dorky little boys who figure out how to basically open a gate to hell in their backyard. And they accidentally open up this gate and they release like all these little demons and various kinds of nasty things into their house. It's kind of like Home Alone with demons. So they're just like constantly trying to like protect their house and get the demons out.
Sounds a little like Gremlins too. Like, I've bitten off more than I could chew. There are monsters now.
Yeah, yeah. There's like, there's little demons that are like tiny. They're these, they look like weird little muscular men with like demon faces. They're really creepy. And they're tiny and they just scatter all over the house. There's like too many of them. And I remember being really scared of those things as a kid.
The whole Addams Family thing was big for me growing up.
For sure.
Were you ever scared of it?
I don't think I was scared of it. I was attracted to it because it was creepy. It was and more spooky, like goals. But I don't remember. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Wednesday Addams. Yes, that is my aesthetic goal for my teen years.
As many times as we have talked about how amazing Stranger Things is, I think that's a big one of the many, many reasons why it's amazing. I think it's both something as an adult you can be scared of and you can understand why it's scary. It hits on that kind of like parental thing. You know, you've lost your kid. Mm-hmm. You need to protect these kids. You're helpless. Nobody's listening to you. And it also hits on that thing where it takes adults and it reminds you of what it feels like to be a kid, to ride through the neighborhood alone on your bike.
Have people not listen to
Even
you.
Even to get like locked in a room by a stranger who you don't know and you don't know where you are.
Stranger Things honestly kind of feels like somebody made a formula for connecting all the dots in the things that scared us in various stages of our lives and then
put
it all together.
But I wonder if that would be something that if a kid watched it, they would even be interested in.
Feel like yes.
I think again that would have to be from like the 8 and up realm, because there's just below 8 there has to be a bit more
goofiness.
Like there's got to be more like ongoing monster action, kind of a more like regular placed
adventure.
Yeah, like more like regularly placed like exciting things happening, where Stranger Things has a lot of quiet time. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more about like relationships, and so you have to be at a place where you can, you know, understand that concept.
Understand human relationships.
Right, and kind of care about, like, the friendships and the relationships more.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited to show Max Goonies one day, but that's another one of those things that, like, I think...
That will be good, though.
You know, he's not really gonna care about it enough until he cares about, like, relationships and friendships more.
Yeah, honestly, I don't like the Goonies, and this surprises a lot of people, but I think it's because I was introduced to it too young, and I just didn't give a shit about it. And now, like, I have not watched it since I was little and didn't care about it, so I just still don't care about it.
I think I've covered everything that I had on this. Did we miss something that you guys wanted to pick apart a little bit, or did I miss anything that's really important to you?
Anything by Roald Dahl? I think that was one where it's like, it's kind of like a fairy tale, but it's also real spooky. And like,
Matilda is like the ultimate.
That's definitely a good one as far as like books and movies.
For some reason, I remember thinking like Shel Silverstein did those kids' poetry. And some of those I remember thinking were kind of creepy in a like surreal fantasy way.
Yeah. There's like ones of people taking off their heads or something. Yeah, of like a man with like balloons as heads or something.
Yeah.
Like every so often there'd be a real spooky
one. That just reminded me, one of the series that I really loved to be scared by growing up was Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's one that like if you didn't watch it as a kid, you would not be able to watch it as an adult. But if you go back and watch it, it's super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I skipped over a lot of those, like the Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark? I remember watching a few episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark, but I think at that point I made a leap very quickly from Jim Henson into like Stephen King into like, you know.
You were just too cool for school.
I just took big leaps. I didn't like take my time to enjoy the era that I was in.
That's fair. We also haven't talked about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is the perfect combination of...
It's the best.
It's like the stories and like the writing is simple and easy for kids, but then paired with the imagery and that artwork is a thing that is just like, once you see it as a little kid, you're going to think about it the rest of your life.
Yeah, you that doesn't leave you. That artwork stays with you your whole entire life. It's crazy. We also have a few social media mentions here.
Yeah, I have a couple too.
I'm gonna go ahead and read Patrick's. Patrick is a friend of mine, and he's one of our listeners here. On Facebook, Melissa asked, tonight we're recording Horror for Kids episode. Tell us about your scariest moments in horror as a kid. And Patrick LaRose, I'm just going to read it verbatim. Mine has to be when I was like 5 or 6 and The Sixth Sense was out on VHS. My babysitter brought it along to watch with my older sister and I was explicitly forbidden from seeing any of it. Peeked around back of the couch to see the entire school scene with the people hanging from nooses.
Oh, no.
That along with the scene where at the birthday party,
he gets trapped.
For the first time, yeah, in my life, a movie ever gave me a nightmare. I can definitely see that. Mm-hmm. That's horrifying.
That's one of the good things about being a kid and being around horror, because you're like, I'm not supposed to be watching this. And mm-hmm. that's the part that makes it fun.
Right, and then you scare the shit
and
out of yourself.
And then you realize,
like,
I shouldn't have watched that. I feel bad right. now.
My dad watched a lot of slasher stuff when I was a kid, like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. And I remember watching those kind of like around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I'd watch them and then like... Just kind of keep peeking. We had a few things on Twitter, too. At Greg Hyatt says Monster Squad was his kind of horror that he remembers a lot from childhood. At Geek Country Lady, a scene from a police procedural where a builder knocked down a chimney and a mummified body fell out.
Jeez.
What?
I don't know exactly. Well, I think a police procedural sort of means, I actually had to look up because I didn't know if that was the name of a show, but I think it's just a description for like a true crime. Yeah. So yeah, I didn't see that one, but I can see why that would be terrifying as a child.
I'm just remembering this. For as much as my mom didn't like horror, she was really into like medical drama shows. And so I'd like watch ER with her and things like that. And it were like, oh, what's it called? It's like 911 kind of calls. And that kind of stuff got really dark and morbid sometimes.
Like cops and stuff?
Kind of. There was one that was specifically like reenacting 911 calls, which I should
find that. What about Unsolved
again.
Mysteries?
That was
a big one in my house.
That was a good
house.
One, too. That's one
and
that you
watched. And that got dark.
Yeah.
That got real sometimes.
Dude, I remember the intro to that and his voice and, like, the music and, mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It's always intense. There's always somebody scary coming when you hear him talking. Miss Lizzie on Twitter said It, which she watched often on VHS that they recorded off of TV when she was a child. Lizzie is aging herself with that comment. Our friends at The Witch Files said scary stories to tell in the dark, original Grimm fairy tales, The Exorcist, and The Shining. Girls, if you were watching The Shining when you were young,
yeah.
I don't even know, like, I need to know at what age you were watching that movie, because that is a really messed up movie to see as a kid. Says the person who just, you know, admitted to watching Friday 13th as a child.
And there's one from Ryan on Facebook as well.
Ryan said, my earliest memory of being scared was being 5 and seeing The Secret of Nim. The movie is smart in that it subverts expectations a bit with having Nicodemus and the Great Owl be scary first.
That's a
great movie.
Yeah.
I have a couple too. Our friend Rebecca said, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Tales from the Crypt? Beyond Belief? Nothing was really like super scary, but she has a really distinct memory of a Tales from the Crypt episode where Meatloaf was in it. And the story was about cannibals, and they ate Meatloaf, and Meatloaf was like the funniest thing. And she also remembers watching Beetlejuice and seeing it on TV and thinking it was just like a normal romantic comedy kind of movie, but then they die and being like, "Oh my God, what's happening?" And then Ellie Vaughn, who was on our costume and makeup episode, says the art from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, when Voldemort comes back in the fourth book, and the boat ride from Willy Wonka, which I think is something
that
scarred
terrifying.
All of us. And my friend Katrina saw Poltergeist at 4 years old, which is not a good idea. Still can't handle it, especially the maggot scene. And my friend Maria saw the Blair Witch Project when she was too young, and now she's still afraid of camping.
I don't remember at what age I saw Poltergeist, but I'm pretty sure I saw it too young.
Yeah.
And it is the reason why I now can't, anytime a ghost movie, they make sound or they talk in a ghost movie, I blame it on that. Like, I can't handle it. I have to, like, hide under my blanket, and I start, like, shaking and getting so scared. And I think it's just because of that, all those sounds and the poltergeist, you know, mommy, just hearing her like yell through the air as she's floating around in that in between space that she was trapped in. Yeah, it just instilled a forever fear of ghosts talking to me.
That's just one more thing that Stranger Things kind of tapped into also, like kids kind of trapped in the walls, but also in a different dimension and trying to communicate.
Like Jackie said, they tapped into the perfect formula, totally whatever that formula was.
They got it
They just took like the best of every horror thing that's ever scared people. And
like, I'm honestly convinced they like set out a mathematical formula to really rope in all these different things. Mm-hmm. Like it's just too perfect. Sure. You know what I mean?
Well, hopefully they can hit that lightning again for the second season, right?
The preview thing that played looks really cool with the big monster in the sky. The Super Bowl ad
I haven't seen it yet.
Ooh, it's cool. It doesn't give too much information, but you see a big monster.
So I think we've covered this one. I think we've nailed it. It's a fun topic to talk about because there's so much material, mm-hmm. and I think we really like delved into. We really kind of picked it apart on a few different angles. So this was really fun for all of us to kind of bring up some different angles. Oh, another one that I enjoyed recently was Miss Peregrine's Home for...
Oh, yeah, I still want to watch that.
What is it? Home for...
Peculiar Children?
Peculiar Children, yeah. That one is very much, I think, kids' mm-hmm. horror, too. It's a kid's story about kids, and the monsters are pretty damn terrifying. Like, I had to really, like, question myself whether I was going to show that one to Max or not. But really fun. And, of course, Eva Green. We all love Eva Green.
She's amazing.
Yeah, so I think we're gonna wrap this one up. We have gone through some crazy technical things tonight to bring this episode to you. Our editor, Mr. Drew, is gonna curse us for a while this week, but
he's gonna work some magic.
he'll do some magic, and Jackie will be extra nice to him. Maybe.
It's just Valentine's Day.
It's like one day you have to be nice. Our next episode, which I want to mention quickly, I'm really excited about. We're going to do another comics episode. Yeah, we haven't done one for a while. So I voted in Witches, which is a comic book series from Scott Snyder and illustrated by Jock. It's a complete series. A lot of people are hoping it's not going to be complete. I hope that they add more to this because it's an incredible story. And I'm super, super excited for my lovely co-host to read this with me because this is one of the scariest comic series that I've read in a very long time.
Hey, I'm so excited.
And takes a completely new and twisted approach to the idea of witches. So I think it'll be really unexpected and fresh. We're excited about that. And that's coming up. So if you guys want to read along, you can get Witches Volume 1. Jackie found it on Amazon.
Yep.
Pretty cheap. Like,
yeah.
It was like $12 or something.
It was even less than that. It was super easy and affordable.
And the artwork is beautiful. So you will not regret buying this in print. It's a great book to have on the shelf. WYTCHES. So you guys should, you want to read along with that. If you haven't read Witches yet, I'm going to reread it so freshen myself on it. And I'm excited about that. So The Sirens of Scream is a member of the Mega Nerd Media family. Visit MegaNerdMedia.com for geek-related columns, reviews, interviews, and videos. You can reach us via email at SOS@MegaNerdMedia.com and on Twitter at Sirens of Scream. You can find us on Tumblr as Sirens of Scream, and you can find our entire show catalog at SirensofScream.com. Jackie, where can listeners find you online?
I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram.
And Sierra?
I'm at Sierra Hauk. Also, I want to mention my mom just commented on the post that I shared asking people to tell what they were scared of.
Yeah.
And my mom says, what one stick with you? We never watched Trilogy of Terror together, but I saw it with your Aunt Julie when I was about 10 and it scarred me forever. It was creepy good. Aw, Mama Hauk.
Trilogy of Terror. I might be what my mom called me and my sisters. It's a good name for us. It sounds like a name for us. So that's a wrap for this episode. Next time we're going to talk about witches, and we'll see you guys then.
Bye.